It's time for Product Genius with Tiffany Krumman.
And greetings and salutations, everybody. My name is Stephen Julie, and I am your slightly annoying co-host for the fantastical, wonderful, slightly off-kilter, usually truthful, mostly trying to be helpful show that is lovingly known as Product Genius with, not me, but Tiffany Krumman. Hey there, Tiffany.
Hey, I'm wondering how long that sound can get at the beginning.
Oh.
I shouldn't have said that, right?
Wait till the next taping.
You'll pass out.
We are thrilled to be doing our show in front of a live digital audience. Let's hear from them. Yes, there they are. There they are. Actually, Jody was showing off the sound, but I don't think he was showing off. I think he was just, we found out he has sounds that we've never used.
He was pacifying our excitement about this. But
yeah, so I will not ask for any other noises in the show, whether they happen organically or not. That's another question. Hey, today we're going to talk about manufacturing, especially as it relates to China and Asia. Everybody insert your favorite Trump voice here, saying China or however you would say it. We are going to talk with Noah McNeely from Product Quick Start about that. It's a very timely topic. It's not going anywhere anytime soon. And it is one that anybody who's done any kind of product-based business, it's a topic.
Yeah, it's a hot topic, and it's not for the ones that have done the product-based businesses, because we all understand it and understand the need for it. It's the people who haven't and insist on every product being made here, and unfortunately, that's not an option right now.
Here at Atlantic Tech Park inside
here in the U.S.
Did I say it right? Atlanta Tech Park.
Yes.
Broadcasting from Atlanta Tech Park. We're thrilled to be here and glad that they are a partner with us. So, I guess we'll just get right into it. I gave the tease, and 30 seconds later, let's go ahead and talk to him. Noah McNeely from Product Quick Start. Noah, welcome to the program again.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Good to be here.
So if anybody who's been following this show and especially listening to your past episodes, they're starting to become a little bit of a legend and a myth here about our email chain. Where we start, you know, kind of talking a little bit about what we're going to talk about on air. I have to take you to task at the very beginning here and have a little bit of fun.
Okay.
Because as we started this conversation,
I'm slightly terrified.
Yeah. Yeah. You sent an email and said, you guys have any ideas? that was the opening line of the email.
And then he gave us a fantastic idea.
And then he goes, here's what I was thinking about. And usually when you send an idea, Tiffany's very good about, you know, oh, that sounds great. Oh, I'd love that. Oh, this is where this would relate to me. And that relates to my story. I don't know how many exclamation points she used in her response, but clearly she was on board right away.
Yes. You know, next time I think I'm going to come up with a really wacky fake idea and throw it out there.
So now the challenge is you have to find a topic that Tiffany would go, no, I don't think I'll do that.
I knew you were going to say that, but these are actually every topic he's ever brought up has been a part of my journey. So it just made sense.
What I appreciated was you want to talk about somebody who's willing to, you know, kind of help you along in your journey and willing to take you where you need to go. I think that's why you started it with, do you guys have any ideas? I don't think it was because you were tapped out. You just wanted to make sure we knew. No, I'll take your input. Yeah. I want to hear what you have to say. You don't want any of my ideas because this is not my realm by any stretch of the imagination. Don't agree with that so quickly, Tiffany.
Hey, it's my job sometimes to take halfway ideas and, you know, make them whole. So
there you go.
I will take any ideas you have.
So, China, Asia manufacturing. So as you were kind of setting this up, you were talking about one of the things you said was we'll just kind of go through these. So let's start with the first one. When does it make sense versus when does it not make sense to use that whole manufacturing overseas?
Okay, that's like 8 questions all in one.
Not really.
On the top level.
Okay. It was the first one you wrote.
I know, but it wasn't in any particular order.
Answer. Oh, okay.
That's just the first kernel of popcorn that burst in my brain.
There you go.
Doing that. So on the top level, every project is different. Every business is different, and it's really important to find the right match. And sometimes, like Tiffany, you were saying, sometimes people come in, it's like, it's got to be made in the USA. And sometimes it can be. Well, all the time it can be. That doesn't necessarily mean it's not a forced fit. And sometimes trying to make something in Asia, that's a forced fit too. So it's really more, it's really more about finding the right match for your business plan. So on a top level, anything that involves a lot of labor or assembly work, that's something I'd look at Asia for. Usually China, and we can talk about China, Asia, and the difference. The other thing I found, especially with inventor entrepreneurs, is that it's a very good thing to have one point of responsibility. And that's a lot easier to find in Asia because I can go to a vendor group. There's several that I work with, I've worked with for a long time, that I trust. And even though the core of the vendor group may be a plastics factory or a metal factory or whatever, they've got an alliance of other factories. So I did a project recently that involved some wood parts, involved some plastic parts, involved some metalworking parts. And I was able to get that in one place where, even though it's not clear that if they own the wood factory or not, you know, it's always a little fuzzy, but they take responsibility for it.
And so, you're invoiced by one person and whatnot.
So my client didn't have to write a PO to three different Chinese companies. We wrote a PO to one supplier to deliver a product, not three suppliers delivering three parts of a product. And that's the other area I think for inventor entrepreneurs is really important for Asia.
Let me ask a more clarifying question. To go a little bit more from top view down to a little bit more detailed, is price the only reason that someone should look at Asia/China for their manufacturing, or are there, and I think you just named another one. Sometimes there's an alliance that doesn't necessarily exist here in the States that can exist or is more prevalent over there, maybe is what you were saying. What are some of the other reasons other than price that someone would look at Asia or China for manufacturing?
So again, look at Asia, China, or look at the US or look at wherever. Price is one key element. Capability is a key element. And I don't know if there's a word for this, sort of what I would call size match. So in the US, for example, you know, there's a lot of factories in the US. It's very difficult to find one that has a broad enough capacity to build many products, yet is willing to work with an inventor entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. An inventor entrepreneur, that's a hard word to say.
Inventor, that's why they're two different words.
Yes. Inventor-entrepreneur makes it easier. Because the volumes just aren't there. So yes,
I had that problem even with Shark Tank. I mean, I had all this exposure from Shark Tank, Barbara as my investor, and I still had that problem in trying to source Ava the Elephant here. I went through three different factories, could not even get them to speak with us or work with us. And when I did get quotes, they were through the roof.
It's not that they wouldn't love to work with you. It's really just more volume. The business model is what the business model is. And there are certain variables that work better in other countries than they do here. So those are the three things. Cost. Sometimes it's actually cheaper to make something in the US. So cost is not always something that drives you to China. I mean, if you're making something that has very little assembly time or very little labor involved, it's just a plastic widget that you turn the machine on and out pops 1,000 plastic widgets. Not going to be a lot of cost savings going to Asia. But if you're doing a product where, well, somebody's got to take that plastic widget and they've got to bolt a metal widget onto it, then they've got to put it inside this other widget and then they got to put it in a box. Well, then that's where you're going to see that cost savings, because you're going to pay $15, $20, $30 an hour here for someone to do that. In Asia, it's going to be a much lower cost.
So, one of the other things that in our email chain and the legendary behind the curtain conversation that we had. So what are factories in China really like?
It depends.
So I've been to China. Mm-hmm. I've toured. As I mentioned, I've got, there's actually about five. I don't work with one as much anymore. There's five vendor groups I've done a lot of work with over the years. And when I say vendor groups, what I mean is it's not just single factories. It's places I can go to get complete products created. And they all have their advantages and disadvantages. Some are really, really good at higher tech stuff. Some are really, really good at cut and sew items. Another is really good at, you know, just metal and plastic and that sort of stuff. Like, you know, we've got that product coming up that we, you know.
Still can't talk about publicly on the air.
Yes.
Though you're with your trusty, slightly annoying co-host. It's going to come out and it's going to be like, it's a spittoon made out of plastic and brass.
The Tiffany Crewman's flying car. But so some, you know, factories come in all different shapes and sizes in Asia. And some of them, I've been in factories that have thousands of employees, and they're, you know, actually the factory that makes the Roomba robot vacuum. I toured that factory. It's huge. I mean, it covers like two city blocks worth of space, and it's got thousands of employees and very professional. They all wear these company, you know, company wardrobe, I guess. I've also been in factories that have six employees and everything in between. Now, the factory that has six employees, they were actually making very high quality product for one of the products they make is for the Zippo brand, you know, the lighter brand. So it's not necessarily that the size implies quality. It's just the size being the right fit for the product. Now, you tried that Zippo, that particular Zippo product was kind of a limited edition. You know, they're going to make like 1,000 a month of those. You take that to the factory that's got 2,000 employees and you won't even get in the door. At the same time, you try to make the Roomba in this little factory with six people, and you know, you won't get anywhere. So it's factories come in all different shapes and sizes. You know, it's not like you see in the movies that they're all, you know, the ones I've been in are very, very modern factories. The ones my vendor groups work with are very modern. They don't have slave labor. You don't have a bunch of old ladies chained to the desk doing that. You know, that's all kind
of. That's of the past, almost exclusively, at least in the people you're dealing with.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, sure, there's some sketchy parts of the world, including China and everywhere else that you want to avoid.
So let me ask this question. What, if any, differences are there between, so let's get into it a little bit, between China and the other Asian manufacturing regions that you've dealt with or been around or worked with or heard about?
It really comes down to a capacity situation. China started, you know, if you're into history, China really started opening up in the 70s. You know, Nixon established relationships with them. If that hadn't happened, China would probably be a lot like North Korea. They'd be a very closed society. And, you know, North Korea is not exporting a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. So China started opening up then. So that's what, half a century ago now. So they've been building their capacity since then. There are places in China, you walk down the street, you throw a rock in the air, you're going to hit a factory. So that's one of the big things about China is there is so much capacity that you can find factories that can take on like a Black & Decker and make hundreds of thousands of drills. You can find a factory that's willing to take on a startup and make 500 of something. Mm-hmm. You can find it all. Now, in other Asian countries, like Vietnam, for example, people get real excited about Vietnam, and I've actually worked with clients that have manufactured in Vietnam. There are just not as many factories to choose from. A lot of the ones there are kind of gobbled up by bigger clients already because they want to say, our product was made in Vietnam. Excuse me. Oops. Too much coffee sitting
I heard nothing. Table. Continue.
I lost my train of thought. Oh, Vietnam.
Vietnam.
Yes, Vietnam. So yeah, you can get everything done in Vietnam. It's just finding the factories to do it is more challenging. So it's just you just got to plan on a longer period of time to build out that supply chain. In China, I can send three emails and have your supply chain. In Vietnam, it's going to take a while. Okay. Or Indonesia or wherever else.
All right. So now let me trigger this question. So we've had a lot of people listening, and Tiffany, you said this show was not necessarily for the people who are in the midst of doing products because they know most of this. So let's talk a little bit about America, good old USA, because I think if we didn't in the next 5 minutes, we might have angry, strongly worded emails coming our way if we don't at least talk about it. So let me ask this, as someone who deals a lot with factories, as someone who deals a lot with getting things produced, helping people go from product design to actual product on the shelf, what does American manufacturing do really, really well and maybe even better than anybody else in the world, or at least as good as other areas of the world?
I would say that quality wise, you can get the highest quality in the USA.
Somewhere a bunch of people, yeah, all right, and they're all chanting, and now Lee Greenwood is playing in the background.
You can, however, also get the lowest quality in the USA.
Oh, and dang it! And that's I thought we had it.
That's true of any country. China as well. You can get very high quality if you know what you're doing. You can also get very low quality if you don't. And you know, in the USA as well. it really comes down to, just like in China, it's a garbage in, garbage out type of thing. So the more tightly you control that, the better. You can't just expect, well, I went to this guy down the street who has a plastics factory, and since he's USA, I know it's going to be highest quality. Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, every factory is different, and that's true everywhere. If you're going in there and saying, well, I got to get you, you've got to get this cost competitive with China, they're going to have to cut a lot of corners to do that. So that's going to reduce your quality there.
Is that because cost of labor? Is that the main reason why is because of cost of labor?
That is probably the overarching reason. There are other elements as well. I mean, if you take tooling, for example, you have to make this big steel tool for your to make a plastic part. That's also the same answer, because cost of labor. You can make the tool here in the U.S., and it's a very labor-intensive process, so it's going to cost two or three times what it would cost to make it offshore. Oftentimes, the plastic factories here, they will still make the tool offshore in China or Taiwan or et cetera, but then they've got to put a 25% steel tariff on it, so that's going to drive the cost up. Plus, they're going to mark it up as well. So, yeah, there are other cost drivers involved.
All right. What are some of the best scenarios for someone to use manufacturing here in the United States versus China? Now, Tiffany, I'll kind of start with you. You, way back when, you started by saying, well, yeah, let me look and see if I can get it done in America, and just simply couldn't be done really for what you were trying to do. As you've kind of been around the Shark Tank environment, and as you've worked with other product-based businesses and business leaders, what do you see as the best fit for someone wanting, you know, what are the projects that work best here in America?
It's like Noah said earlier, it has to be less labor intensive. So Ava is not a good fit here for two reasons. Price, they can't ever seem to get the right price on Ava, because she's got components to her that jack up that price. And then the labor. So she's got eyes painted on her, ears are painted. Excuse me, the sound box has to be put in. And so every time somebody touches that product versus, like he said, one just popping out of a tool, maybe it's a little hair clip or something that just literally falls right out of the tool or the machine into a bin and it's done. It's a big difference on timing. Yeah. So that's why I couldn't, anything simple like that is better here. Very simple.
And there are some other areas too. Some cases margin is, you know, you've got plenty of margin in a product, and what's more important to you in those cases, you know, maybe you don't need the cost to be absolutely minimum, but you want to save in other areas. Like, you don't want to have to ship it. You don't want to have to wait for it. Maybe you're running a very tight production schedule where it's almost manufactured to order. So you might be supplying companies that they expect to order a product and have it in a week. Well, then that's where U.S. manufacturing makes sense.
That's a great point, because like Ava, if Ava was not a product that should sell for about $12, $10 or $12, and it was a, you know, $49 product, I'd make it here all day long at the higher price, because I'd still have the margins, but I don't have them. Right. I don't have enough room in there to make it work.
And of course, there's some sensitive areas too. I mean, if you're making missile guidance systems, you're not going to want to make that in a foreign country. Yeah. the types of stuff. My clients are very rarely working high-end military technology.
Noah sounds like he's joking, but he's actually done some of that crazy stuff.
Very rarely, but occasionally. But so if the Chinese can somehow figure out how to militarize the latest meat thermometer or baby swaddler or...
Don't put it past them, some of our patriots are saying.
Yeah, well, in that case, that certainly we wouldn't want to make those there. So... I think most of the types of products I work in are not a particular interest to the Chinese government.
All right. So there was another part of our conversation that revolved around the big fears.
Ah.
So the number one fear that was listed here, but
not,
I would say.
It's not Godzilla.
No. No.
That's Japan.
Besides, Godzilla is going to face
anyway.
King Kong. Right. Exactly.
Yes. Another part of Asia.
That's right.
Not China. Though I had to explain to my kids.
That I think Japan, Mothra was from China.
Yes. My youngest child seemed to think that Japan was a city in China. I had to explain that to her.
Nice. Well done. So the big fears that people have about China. So obviously, one of the big ones is, hey, they're going to steal my idea. We've heard a lot about intellectual property and things like that. So the Chinese are going to steal my idea for Ava the Elephant.
Well, let's unpack that a little bit. So if you just go to Alibaba and you find the first factory there that's, hey, they're selling a bunch of product that looks like my product, I bet they can make this for me, your chances of them stealing that are maybe a little bit higher for a couple of reasons. One, they're a company that's already in the business of selling product. They're not just a manufacturer. They sell product. Yes, they probably own some factories as well. They look at your product and they're like, oh, this is great. We can sell this. We can make it and sell it ourselves. That's very dangerous to do. The vendors that, again, I work with and the vendors you should work with, even outside of mine, those are going to be factories that they're not in the business of selling product. They're in the business of what's called contract manufacturing. They make product that other people tell them to make, and they do it exclusively for those clients.
So to
they
be
don't know how to sell product. They don't want to sell product. It's not their business.
So to be clear, there is a legitimate fear if someone is going to wade into these waters completely by themselves and just do an internet search or an Alibaba search and go, hey, let me find. I mean, it has happened.
Yes. So okay. If you need painkiller and you go buy it from a guy on the street corner, there's a legitimate fear of it not being appropriate there too. So it's a similar type of thing.
So the key takeaway there is work with a contract manufacturer,
right,
who's not in the business of selling product. They are in the business of manufacturing product.
And they are in the business of maintaining relationships. So if they have a relationship with someone like Noah, they don't want to break that relationship. He's brought, hundreds of products to them. And so they don't want to wrong the company that's worked with them. They want to do the right thing most of the time.
Got it.
And relationships are a very important element of the Chinese business culture. Here in the South, we used to have what we called the good old boy system.
Right.
In China, it's like that on steroids. So that's why I say I've had relationships with these people for many, many years. It took a while to get that level of trust. And now it's at the point where, one of the ladies I work with over there, she had a baby last year. She sent me pictures of her baby. And, we have that type of relationship now. So we trust each other. She'll come back and say, are you sure you want to make it this way? It's going to be real expensive. So we can talk through that. Early on, when I first started talking to that company years ago, I didn't have that level of relationship. But after a while of quoting some things and getting to know each other, that trust builds.
You have to learn to separate your view of China's government from these people as business owners. Mm-hmm. Because, I have a view of China's government that is not good, obviously, and most people do. But these are people, and a lot of them have, legit businesses, like you said, that are doing the right thing. So if you can trust them.
They're just normal people you and me.
They're trying to make their world a little better place, take care of their family.
Trying to raise their kids, doing everything you and I are. And, I don't trust the Chinese government either. No. You might want to edit that out. Frankly, I'm not sure I trust our government entirely, to be honest. But to circle back around, to use that common phrase these days, to circle back around on the idea stealing, where that happens, in my experience, it's not so much your factory that is taking your idea. It's after you've been on the market, you've had some success, someone just buys it and they copy it. And dirty little secret there, it's probably an American company that bought it and sent it to China and said, hey, you guys copy this.
And the key to what Noah just said is you've probably come up with a product and had some success. Rarely does somebody have a novel idea that somebody just goes, oh my God, this is going to be a hit and I'm going to knock it off. They watch and they wait and they want to see, this product.
Right.
Shark Tank's products are the perfect example. Almost all of them have been knocked off at some point, and some of them 50 times over because they've waited and they've watched, and these are the ones that are doing well. And if they're easy to knock off, they've done it many times over.
Fantastic. All right.
Not really, but
it's just the way the world works.
Yep.
It's the way business happens, unfortunately, in certain sectors. Okay. So
but your factory, they're in it with you. I mean, they're motivated.
Because they want another order.
So that you make more sense.
Yeah.
So they're not trying to undercut that.
Right. All right. So one of the other big fears that people have talked to you about at times, they're going to send me bad quality.
So we touched on this a minute ago, and I think China got a bad rep for quality back in the 70s, 80s, when they were first learning how to make stuff. There's actually this old story that our old friend Don used to like to tell about. They purchased the plans for, I think, the 747 or something from Boeing. They were going to make one. And this was very early on in Chinese engineering period. And it was, it cost for a lot of aluminum, but aluminum was really expensive. They're like, let's just make it out of steel. So they built this plane. It could go really fast on the runway, but it never took off because it was too heavy. So that's the China.
Is that a true story?
Don tells it like it's a true story. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that it is.
I trust Don.
Yes. Well, yes. he embellishes things once in a while, I think.
Sure.
But, that's the China of 60 years ago. So the quality in China is actually really, really good now. Just like anywhere else. You can get bad quality. You can get good quality. But you know, half the things in your life that you're like, man, this is a nice product, probably made in China. If you got an iPhone, made in China. That's, and you certainly don't question the quality of that.
Yeah.
Now, at the same time, you can go buy a 50-cent piece of junk. And
sure. It's dollar store junk. Item made in that's China. Right. And you're like, this thing's a piece of garbage. Well, you paid a dollar for
it. It's not a piece of garbage because it was made in China.
Exactly.
It's a piece of garbage because it was meant to be
it
a piece of garbage.
Need to exist.
Because it was a 50-cent kazoo.
Yes.
And Tiffany, your story with that, and forgive me, I don't remember. Even though you've said it a few times.
What,
Ava.
The barking elephant.
The barking elephant, right?
Yes, that so, was just a communication issue. But
so you got a batch of Avas.
Yeah. And they had barking sound instead of our sweet little song. So
well, I had a client that made Christmas decor once upon a time, and the factory thought they were going to be very proactive, and they sent them a bunch of designs that all said, have a shiny Christmas. Again, just communications, translation errors.
Yeah.
I think we should make that a trend.
I think
hashtag have a shiny
have
Christmas.
Have a shiny Christmas. I like it.
all right. So how does so I think one of the last questions I'll ask, and I think we've got more questions. We could make this a two-parter if you'd like. That's always my job, is to turn it into a mini-series. I want to bring back the mini-series.
next time.
That's right. Next time on Noah McNeely. How do you talk a little bit about you personally working with China? Because one of the things that's coming out of this conversation, one of the reasons for this conversation, you've been over there. You've talked about these long relationships. Mm-hmm. Talk about personally working with factories in China and just maybe the differences between here and there, as far as, because you work with factories here in America and you work with factories all over the world.
So I've nurtured the relationships to the point where the people I work with most of the time, now once in a while I have to go find something new. So that's a little bit different. I've nurtured the relationship to the point where that communication is very easy. I mean, I can handle quite a lot of it by email. It's very rare I have to get on a Skype call with China, but we can do that. The key to China, in my opinion, is try to keep the communication very simple, very direct. Yeah, you know, I've had certain clients that I had a client a year or two ago that he wanted to communicate directly with them. I was like, okay, why don't you keep me in the middle at least, you know, so I can help translate. Nope, I want to do it myself. So he'd write these long flowery emails, and the China people would call, you know, they would email him back. It's like, what in the world is this person talking about? So keeping it simple, understanding there is a communication.
Take out the emotion, right? Well, just get down to business.
English majors need not apply.
Yes, more matter, less art, as Shakespeare would say.
I like it.
So, I mean, that's the key. Over time, I've developed the ability to be very efficient in that communication. You know, it's how I personally work with them, just to walk through the steps. So we get a new project. Early on in the design development phase, I like to send them a preview. You know, if it's one of the vendor groups I think has the factories that we'll work with or could potentially work with, I'll send them some early design concepts and get their factory engineers to provide feedback, which is very important because sometimes we'll get back, hey, this is cool, but if you did it this way, it'd be a little bit cheaper, and then we can go back and forth. I can get them involved. It doesn't cost my client anything to get a few more heads in the game at that point. As we work through it, I normally like to get to the point where we are having the factory build a prototype. Now, we have to pay for that usually because unless there's some other extenuating circumstances, but usually the factory charges a few hundred dollars to build a prototype. I like to do that because then their factory floor engineers are involved in that. They get all the kinks worked out. Most importantly, they eliminate all the unknowns that they would have to quote against. So then when they quote the manufacturing, they've already been through it one time. They don't have to quote against mysteries. Mm-hmm. If they're quoting mysteries, the price goes up. So now they're quoting something they've already physically built one of, and then we can get that quote to the client, and it's usually a lot less. And then Then that's from there, great.
Yeah. So rather than go to, you know, a prototyping company here, sending them something and then expecting them to duplicate it, you'd rather them.
Well, sometimes I do both. I mean, sometimes we need that prototype here first, but then before we get them to quote, I always recommend my client, let's go ahead and, you know, let's throw $500 at having them make a prototype as well. And then, you know, they'll tool up, we'll get samples off the tool, and then they do mass production. Always get the samples off the tool. Always approve those before we do any sort of mass.
I want to wrap us up here, but I want to ask one other quick question, maybe to both of you. Any horror stories? I mean, based on what you just said, this is how I work with China. This is how I make it work. This is how I've worked over time to develop great relationships. Tiffany, you've told the story of kind of searching out, you're getting the barking dog. You've been in the Shark Tank circles. You've had Facebook groups that we've promoted here on the show and LinkedIn groups.
I had one.
Horror stories?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a horror story because it turned out.
We have horror music for that, but I don't want to push it. All right, go ahead.
They ended up fixing it, so it ended up not being so bad, but it was bad for business at the time. Ava's came over at one point, and the factory that I was working with had cut corners on the clamshell, which is the plastic packaging, and they tried to use a thinner material, and all of them got crushed. So the part that goes over her trunk basically was just completely crumpled on tens of thousands of units. But they fixed it by sending replacements, and then they covered basically off of invoice the cost that that we had to incur to put all of those on, which was a lot of time and effort.
Wow.
So yeah, that was about as bad as it got for me because I've only worked with two different factories. So I haven't had too bad, but that's bad because it basically set us behind on getting to retail and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Noah, you got a horror story?
The way I would have prevented that is I would have demanded samples in the packaging first. Mm-hmm. Now that it might have been a situation.
I think they changed after. Yeah, I think we had them and they tried to.
Yeah, that they shouldn't do. So you want to make sure that.
So you prevent that what by having the material correct that it is written in stone on each PO or that what material they're using even for the clamshell.
Well, the way I do is like you when I get that sample and I like it and I say you're going to make them all just like this.
Yeah,
that's the way I make it very direct. Don't change anything without approval.
That comes back to your relationship though. You know, yes. Again, I didn't have that. This was a new factory. And so, yeah, once you develop those, they're not going to cut those corners on somebody they've worked with.
So the horror stories I have are usually kind of going the other way. It's more when sadly to say, when the client wants to take over that relationship and they want to try to, you know, be the big tough American that goes in and tells the Chinese factory what to do. And
I know we have no frame of reference for that,
right?
For our listeners living here in 2021. I know there's no frame of reference of any politician doing that.
I can't imagine.
All right, go ahead. Sorry, so, I wanted to.
So atypical of Americans. You know, I had a client several years ago, remain nameless. It was a fairly big, complicated project. And, working with a factory, they were building out the first ones, and he's like, the price coming back too high, and we're explaining, well, you've got a lot going on here. Here's everything driving the cost. Like, no, I'm going to fly to the factory. I want to talk to them. So he flew over to there. You know, spent a week at the factory basically berating them, telling them, you got to get the price, you got to get the price. So the factory said, I'm sorry, we can't do it. We're just going to close out the project. So the factory fired the client because he was being totally unreasonable. So that's
and that can happen. And that can happen with any factory. People seem to think that they can walk into any of these and make them work with them. And if you blow it on your end, then you've lost that time.
It's a partnership. It's not a used car.
So he had to go find another factory.
Yeah.
Yeah. At which point we're like, oh, I'm not going to. You can pay us to do this with you, but I don't think it's a fit for us either.
So right. We already blew our relationship with it. I mean, that was our good relationship, right?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't blow our relationship with the factory because we're like, you know, look, we understand why you fired him. We're kind of irritated about this too. We apologize.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
And again, with the Chinese culture, maybe universal human culture, I always try to be very complimentary about even when I'm criticizing, I try to be very complimentary about what they do or don't do.
Business 101. You start with a compliment, end with a compliment, give what you need to say in the middle.
But I almost feel like it's more important with some of these factories. But maybe that's just my perception.
Well, that's called doing business the right way, I think. You know, anyway. Okay.
Even if it's something, like, hey, you guys picked this color just right. Now, here's everything's wrong.
But I need you to change it slightly. So, Next time on Noah McNeely and China Asia Manufacturing.
I'd like to dive into other countries. I mean, we didn't talk about Mexico. We didn't talk about any of that. Maybe that could be a little piece of the next one.
Sure. There you go. Yeah. Tiffany's given one.
I don't have as much to say on those, but we can certainly talk about what I do know.
Okay. So we kind of touched on it, but we could go deeper into the importance of relationships in the business, Chinese business culture. How does Alibaba fit in this? Because in an older iteration of this show a few years ago, a certain Tiffany Crewmans was very high on Alibaba, and that might have changed over the last few years.
Alibaba used to have 40 thieves. Now I don't know that you can count.
Nice. There's a lot more to talk about with this. So hopefully I've started a mini-series. Although if you only do two episodes, it might not be a mini-series. But anyway, that's a topic for our email.
We'll plan a cliffhanger for that.
Oh, if only we had cliffhanger music. So, Noah, for those for people who are in the middle of developing their product or wanna talk with somebody about product development and also take advantage of the relationships you have in manufacturing, how do they get a hold of you?
The best way is the website. productquickstart.com. There you'll find a contact us form. You'll also find a self-assessment, and we'll be happy to schedule a call with you. If you leave a message that just says, "Hey, I'm Fred, call me," I will eventually call you, but it's going to be prioritized.
It lowers the priority.
Tell me what you want to talk about so I can prep for our call, please.
He doesn't want to waste your time and he doesn't want to waste your money. That's the best thing Noah McNeely can give you because he works in an industry that unfortunately, as we've talked about on this show, at times can waste people's time and money.
And as usual, if you are a Russian bot, I do not need SEO services. I do not need
website redesign. What about your car warranty?
My car warranty is fine. And I do not want to meet any Nigerian princesses.
I like it. Or prince, for that matter.
Either
one. So, Noah, thanks for being here. As always, great conversation. If you were intrigued by what you heard and this is your first time listening to the show, I would encourage you to listen to, of course, all of our shows. But Noah is one of our geniuses. And the reason he's one of our geniuses is he has been around product development. He has been around the manufacturing side of things. He knows a lot of different people who can help you in a lot of different ways. And he gives of his time to this show. He also gives of his time through talking with people who are connected to you on LinkedIn, correct, Tiffany?
Yes.
Tell everybody about what's kind of happening, because we used to have a Facebook group, and that's starting to shift a little bit. Talk a little bit about your shift.
I'm going to move a lot of that energy over to LinkedIn just because it's where I spend most of my time on social media. And then Clubhouse has become such a great resource. I mean, I've just been on there a few times the last few days and have learned so much and made such great connections. I think what we're going to do on Noah's next show is attempt to do a Clubhouse/recording. So we'll be recording the show, but we'll be doing it live. That way we can have people in the group asking questions. I don't know how that will translate to an episode. It may be something we have to
Could absolutely stink. Yeah. Could be one of the greatest things we ever do, which is why that's what you do in product development, right?
So I love answering questions.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
That's true.
I will too.
So people can search for you on LinkedIn, Tiffany Crewmans. They can also go to your website, Tiffany Crewmans with a K, TiffanyCrewmans.com. Crewmans is with a K. And on that are all of our past episodes. Plus you also have some educational stuff people can learn more about. You are doing this show to help people with their business.
Yes.
That's your whole mission.
Absolutely.
And so do that. Also momgenius.com. As far as me, your slightly annoying co-host, my day job is as an independent financial advisor. Compliance compels me to not tell you any more than that. Although you can search my name, Stephen Julian, financial advisor. You'll find out more about me. And the man you never hear from, but is actually the secret weapon of this show, is Jody Smith, jodysmith.com. He helps people podcast. He helps us podcast. He can help you podcast too. Go check out jodysmith.com. So for Noah and for Tiffany and for Jody, this is your slightly annoying co-host, Stephen Julian, saying we'll catch you next time on Product Genius.